And it's just about 25 minutes now after the hour on this Transcendent Tuesday. Sharon Burgess is with us. David is off today. He'll be back tomorrow. Also with us now, Dr. Don Clark. Don, has it been a couple of weeks or did we do this last week?
No, it's been a couple of weeks.
Okay.
We skipped last week.
Yeah, it's a strange schedule for the radio station here. But today it's as close to normal as we get around here. And Don joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Garden Valley, Texas, about 80-90 miles east of Dallas and a couple hours from where we are in Central Texas. And Don is a biochemist. And those of you who are new to the station maybe need to hear a little background about him. Don, I could get you to tell us about your pharmaceutical experience.
Well, I had,
professionally, of course, you know.
that experience.
Yeah.
That's a loaded question, huh?
Yeah. No, I worked with a pharmaceutical company out in California. Then I also worked with a biotechnology company here in Texas, down in the Woodlands near Houston for a number of years. And during that time, especially when our small biotechnology company got bought out by a larger startup biotechnology company, I ran clinical research and did regulatory affairs for the product that we were developing. And so I've got a lot of experience in looking at clinical data. I've got a lot of experience in running clinical trials and in interacting with the FDA and kind of knowing, what the FDA is looking for as far as drug approval, at least what it used to be looking for. And now that may have changed in this current environment, but we'll see. That's kind of my background.
What do you know then about how viruses behave? Is there a pattern that you can relate to us?
The easiest way to understand viruses is to look at, what do we know about bacterial infections? Because other than the size of the organism, a bacteria, of course, is got DNA and a cell membrane and various things like that, whereas a virus is just basically a packet of either DNA or RNA. And the COVID virus that we're experiencing now is a RNA virus, which means that in order to replicate, it's got to do a trans. Produce DNA from its RNA, which actually it gets those enzymes from the cell that it's the host cell that it's infecting. But basically, your body produces when you get infected with anything. Your body produces, if you have a healthy immune system, your body will produce antibodies towards that agent. It usually begin to be developed within 5 to 7 days, sometimes a little longer. That's why you start to feel better after about 5 or 7 days when you've built up enough of the antibodies to be able to neutralize the invading organism. And neutralizing means that there is enough antibody concentration in your bloodstream to completely coat the invading organism. And then there are macrophages, there are the big white blood cells, for example, that come and chew up those invading organisms, whether it be a bacteria or a virus.
Okay, well, then I have this question. We know about bacteria and how they can change. There can be mutations in the bacteria. For example, they can become immune to certain antibacterial medicines. That, I think, has been established. Can a virus do the same thing?
Oh, viruses do the same thing. Matter of fact, they do it better because they're... they're less complex, and so they can mutate pretty rapidly. And
I was going to ask you. It seems to me that if the virus is living in a host, that's when it would create a variant of some kind. That is, it would mutate to another form in reaction to what that host, how the host is defending itself. I know it's not an intelligent creature. It's not a life form, right, officially, but it tends to act to perpetuate its own survival, hence the variations or the mutations. My question with respect to COVID is, in the research that I have seen, and it's different in the U.S. and in Europe, apparently, but the report from Europe is that countries that have had the highest vaccination rate for COVID also had the worst problem with the Delta variant, whereas those countries who had very low vaccination rates had virtually no problem with the Delta variant. So logic says to me that there's some connection between the vaccination and the creation of the Delta variant. Is that reasonable?
Well, not necessarily in that the vaccinated people, cause. Well, it's your terminology may be a little because you want to say, well, okay, the vaccinated people caused the variant to appear, and in essence, it did, because if you had COVID, regardless of whether you vaccinated or not, if you had COVID, then you developed broad-spectrum antibodies, if you will, or a whole cascade, as well as B cells and T cells. So you've got a whole collection of protection against any variants that may form. Now, if you hadn't had COVID and you had the vaccine was effective against the original COVID-19 that, first appeared, that it was designed against that. It was the spike protein. It was a very specific sequence of the spike protein. And so therefore it killed off, or it protected people against the spike protein and against the original variant, the original COVID. But what happens is that you don't have very broad protection. It's specific, highly specific to that particular spike protein. So, when the viruses are floating around in your body and they're reproducing, errors jump in. And those errors then, get manifested in the, let's say the DNA sequence of, the amino acid sequence of the spike protein. And if enough changes occur, then the original vaccine will not work.
Okay, now we're getting really really close to my question here. And I'm suggesting here that mutations don't happen outside the host. In other words, if there's a layer of this virus on a surface, it dies off in a short period of time. It doesn't live long enough to produce a variation, so that a mutant strain of the virus is a reaction to a host's immune system.
Well, look at it this way. You have a population of viruses. Your body is making viruses. That's, when you're infected, the infection, the virus goes into your cells, and you go through several cycles of the cells, your cells take in the virus, and the virus then begins to take over control of the cell and make viral particles, which eventually the cell burst, and now you've got thousands, if not trillions, of viral particles floating around your system. And so it's a game of population that each time the virus replicates, you have a chance of it mutating. Now, if you, with your natural immunity, your body is designed to take care of the various mutations, if you will, from the COVID infection. But when you start off with, let's say, having an artificially, manufactured immune response to only one component of the virus, then you have a very narrow protection against the virus. And so there is a greater chance of variations that the virus normally goes through will appear in those individuals, and they become sick. And this is what we're seeing now with the Delta variant. The Delta variant probably arose in an individual, for example, that might have been vaccinated, and other variants are arising in people that may have been vaccinated. They can arise out of individuals. This is a normal course for viruses anyway, normal course for bacteria anyway. They, they mutate. Their errors get in their RNA sequence and ultimately gets expressed in the coding proteins.
Okay,
and
then the resulting another follow up question: if you have the vaccination, whether it's Pfizer or Moderna or any others, does that then compromise your immune system? That it limits the effectiveness of the response to any other invading virus, or is it still active and well, depending on what it was to begin with?
Well, so you have okay, so let me maybe explain this a little bit different. You have protection against a very specific spike protein. That's what these vaccines, end quote, produced within your body. It produces the original spike protein. That's what the protection is against. So it's a very, very narrow protection that you're getting. Whereas when you get infected with the virus, you have very broad protection, because not only do you have protection against the spike protein, but it's also you get protection with the all the other parts of the virus.
Well, see, there's the point. Is your immune system still active once you've had the vaccine, so it still protects you the way it would have without the vaccine in it?
Yes, but it doesn't necessarily protect you from getting sick.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Well, is this similar, when you're talking about the variants, is it similar when it comes to flu season, which disappeared last year, when they say, well, the vaccine that we have is only good against X, Y, and Z, and there's only a chance. So when they give you the flu vaccine, they said it should cover most of it, but it probably won't cover this, and you just have to take your chances to see what it's going to cover. So when we're talking about variants, that's the kind of thing you're talking about, where it will shift from year to year.
Right. Or okay. From season to season. I mean, this has been a very quick shift, because it was only last year, and then here we are, in the summer, and we've already got several variants out there. Yes, it's exactly the same thing. Those vaccines, which are better vaccines than the vaccines that we currently have,
because,
by the way,
don't they actually contain the virus?
Well, they were produced in the old-fashioned way, which is we denature or we deactivate the infecting agent, and then we give you that, and then your body responds to it. Even with that, you get imperfect immunity.
Right.
The best immunity is the immunity that you get from being sick and having having been naturally exposed to the natural infecting agent, because it gives you much broader protection. So bringing up the flu vaccines, for example, we know from past history and doing this for eons, a number of years, that flu vaccines are only effective for 40 to 60%. So yes, you're not going to get... you're left exposed to 40 to 60% of whatever's out there. So it may help protect you, and it may not. And so this is exactly what we're finding with these vaccines. And as time goes on, I suspect that these will be even less effective than your standard flu vaccine in protecting us against, COVID variants, for example. We've already had papers, for example, published that the Pfizer vaccine is now down to 39%. There's data to show that it's only 39% effective now against the Delta variant. The Moderna one seems to be a little bit more effective. Still we are going to have these, as time goes on, more and more breakthrough cases with these vaccines. And the worst thing that we could be doing is vaccinating everybody, you know, against against the COVID. But that's exactly what we did, which was exactly the wrong thing to do. The thing to do was, okay, let's vaccinate the most vulnerable in our population, which is the elderly. Let's vaccinate them. Let them get protection from this first round of COVID, and let the natural population build up immunity, natural immunity, which is the best immunity that you could have, build up natural immunity to the original COVID. And now, since the greater population is not getting COVID because they've got immunity to the variants, you don't push the variants in the system. But what we did, we vaccinated healthy people, people who were not at very much risk of having a problem with the disease. And so therefore, now we got a large population of people who don't have natural immunity, but they've got the immunity from the vaccine. And those people are now producing variants that are, infecting other people. So
there's another.
And that poses, and it opposes a risk to the elderly population because they can get it again too. Now, the good news is that the variants, while they may be more ineffective than the original COVID, they will be less virulent, which means that you won't have as much trouble with these variants as you did with the original ones. Doesn't mean that, you know, nobody's going to die from them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not as lethal. And this is the course of most variants for most other viruses. This is following the same type of course of other viruses that we've had floating around the population, whether it's a cold or flu virus. And it's following the same sort of thing. And we are, we've exacerbated the situation by having the greater population vaccinated.
We should have just weathered the storm. Protected the most vulnerable, yeah, and then weathered the storm. One other related question that I think will be of useful nature to our listeners. Can you communicate COVID if you are asymptomatic?
Typically, you need to have a high enough concentration of the virus in your body, which means if you have a high enough concentration in the body, you're going to be expressing some form of sickness, whether it be headaches or maybe a cough or even, you know, some aches that you normally don't have.
Fever.
In order to transmit the disease. So, I would say that if you are, if you're healthy and you say, well, I might feel a little bit sluggish today. It's like with anything. If you're sick, stay home. Get more sleep, drink plenty of fluids, take your vitamin D and a lot of vitamin C, and throw some zinc in there, and then you'll be okay. The rest of the population will be okay. But if you're feeling a little down, don't go into work where you've got a whole concentration of people. Just stay home, but just be a little bit more cautious with this and we'll get over it.
It should disappear. You should be back to normal in 4 or 5 days, maybe quicker.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe less. I mean,
next topic
if your
here.
Immune system is working, properly.
Next big question I have is about masks. Now, I did a search yesterday. It said, I just simply asked, are masks effective against the spread of COVID? And I got such a range of replies that I left confused. There are some that say, yes, it does, yes, it does, yes, it does. Other research pieces say, no, it doesn't. It's nonsense. It doesn't work. But none of these pieces gave me the methodology of the test, of the experiment, so that I could judge for myself. Now, I've heard of heard of one experiment. I think this is one that was written up in the Lancet, the British Medical Journal, at the beginning of last year. And it had the results from one laboratory, which I believe was in Denmark, that they took two rodents, put them in adjoining cages with a common wall, sealed off from each other except for a little hole in the wall, and they covered that with cloth, with mask, like surgical mask cloth, and infected one of them with COVID, and then waited to see what would happen to the uninfected one. And sure enough, there was no communication of the disease. So they said, masks are effective. And that's what Lancet wrote up the article and said, here's a study that indicates masks work. But what didn't get reported out of the Lancet article was that they didn't trust the laboratory. They didn't trust the methodology. This laboratory has a kind of a shaky reputation. That part didn't get spread. But that seems to be the foundation for all these beliefs that masks work. Yet if you walk into a grocery store with 150 people in it, even wearing masks, some with their nose exposed and then some moving them, or in a restaurant where people take it down to eat and put it back, someone needs to test the real world to see if masks work.
Well, there has been a lot of research on this, and this is goes back for not pre-COVID days even. And the surgical masks, the blue masks that you see around, are effective only in stopping droplets. They're not effective. They're not effective in stopping airborne organisms like this virus is carried. This virus is transmitted through the air. It's not transmitted, well, it could be if a person sneezed, they could have some COVID in their sneeze. But other than that, normal breathing, the mask will not stop the virus, and the mask and the virus will be transmitted whether you have a mask on or not. That's with your standard surgical blue mask or the mask that you make at home with your cloth. The only mask that will stop these tiny particles is the N95 masks. And those masks you can't wear very long. Well, you shouldn't wear any mask very long, but the N95, the hospital staff, for example, is recommended that you only wear an N95 mask for 20 to 30 minutes, after which you've got to take it off and breathe.
And those are very carefully fitted, are they not?
And they're very carefully fitted, and you can't touch them, and you put them on, and, you know, you don't have any leaks around the sides of the mask, but to fool ourselves that these masks are the standard mask that you buy in Lowe's or your grocery store or whatever is being effective against COVID is ridiculous, because they're not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
Well, and then so two types of studies, have been done. One is, okay, let's look at the particle size. We'll create various size particles, and we'll see if those particles get through the mask. And when you get down to anywhere near the particle size of these viruses, they don't stop them. So that shows you that, at least from a particle size point of view, that the masks aren't going to stop the flow of the viruses coming out from your breath. That's assuming that you were completely sealed. Your mask was completely sealed.
Well, see, and there's another point. And here I ask, does personal experience make any difference? Because if I put on a mask, come out of the Texas heat into an air-conditioned building, my glasses fog up. That tells me the mask does nothing except redirect breath.
Yeah, up into your eyes, which is nice. And you can't see.
That's true.
The other type of study, which is actually is more of a clinical type of study, where they've actually looked at the infection rate in populations where mask mandates were strictly enforced, and those where there were no mandates, and lo and behold, the infection rates were exactly the same. The mask had absolutely no effect in the general population getting infected with COVID.
Sharon, you had a question. Yeah.
Yeah. So really, if I put all this together, the surest way to stop the transmission is just not to breathe.
Yeah, don't exhale at least.
I mean, isn't that just about where we are?
Well, I mean, the surest way, if you're sick, stay home. I mean, you know, it's just common sense practices that we've been doing for eons, you know, since we understood that there are germs out there. If you're sick, stay home, kind of isolate yourself and, you know, eat your chicken soup and the normal stuff that we would normally do. Mm-hmm. And let's, you know, otherwise, let's get on with life and stop all this nonsense.
And I think for me, the most frustrating part is, as Jim said, you read one article that says definitely do wear it. The other says it has no effect. We've come to a point, number one, where it's hard to know who to believe. And number two, because of that fact, it has become a very political issue. And coming to the point again of discrimination, it's kind of like being a Christian. You're not just a Christian on Sunday. It affects your entire being. And all of this is so woven together that it's difficult to know where the truth is. And if you think you found the truth and it doesn't align with their thinking, then suddenly you're a threat. Jim and I were discussing this earlier today. There's a piece of legislation that's been submitted that says only vaccinated people can fly, which could be an issue because a couple of the airlines have said, we will not mandate vaccines for our pilots and staff. So it's become a political issue, and it just, well, we've talked earlier that there's so much more going on than just a virus. And the reassuring part is God knows what's going on. He may not be telling us right now, but he is the only sure, safe place in all of this.
And if you don't agree with the party line, you qualify as misinformation.
Orwell was right, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yes, but as far as the, you know, like any diseases like we've done in the past, let's just use common sense. And if there are people who are saying, against common sense, then you know you haven't. You're instinctively, you know that something's amiss here.
Not right.
And so go with your gut instinct and do what you would normally do. You'll be fine. But you're right. The political scenario, because they want to change the political system, they've used this as an excuse to do just that.
We have learned a lot today. I think this is useful information, and hopefully folks are taking notes, or at least remembering what they heard here. Because together doing the common sense things, this thing will go away and fade into the past. What may not are political decisions being made now, and I won't even get into that.
Yep. Another time, another place.
We can fix that in 2022 if we can limit the damage for now. We'll see. Don is a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their website. It's creationmoments.com, and there you will find a reservoir of a library of information that supports the biblical story of creation, and it's scientific information. So I recommend you take a look at creationmoments.com. And Don, thanks again very much. Appreciate it. You're always a treasure. Yeah, we straightened some things out, I think, for people today. But we'll see you next week.
All righty. Yes, indeed. I'll be here.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So long, folks. Have a great week.